Thank you, counsel. And we'll go to case 6, U.S. versus Kruger.
You were appointed, were you not, Mr. Mars?
I was, Your Honor.
Thank you for your service.
Yes, court thanks you. The court is deeply grateful for you for taking the case.
Mr. Phillip?
Yes. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Tom Phillip. I represent Paul Kruger. Both sides in this case have filed supplemental briefing, basically asserting the same position, that the case should be remanded for resentencing on Booker issues. However, there still is a Sixth Amendment issue, and that issue still matters, I would say, because this court's decision on it could have an effect on the district court's resentencing of Kruger. It could result in a lower sentence. What I would ask, then, is that this court remand on the Sixth Amendment issue as well, and with some sort of directions for the district court. Basically, I'm asking this court to find a Sixth Amendment right to counsel violation. The case began on June 25th, 2003, in Marinette, Wisconsin, when Mr. Kruger was stopped by Marinette County Sheriff's deputies. They found about 4.8 pounds of marijuana in his truck, and later found about 1.8 pounds at his home, works out to be about 3 kilograms. Kruger was arrested and charged in the state court in Marinette. He was appointed attorney Kent Hoffman, a state public defender, and he appeared with Mr. Hoffman in state court. At some point, the United States became involved and informed Marinette County they'd be filing charges against Mr. Kruger. A criminal complaint and arrest warrant was signed by Magistrate Sickle in Green Bay on August 7th, and that, I would say, began this federal court case.
And when was the state court case dismissed?
On August 8th, 2003, the next morning. Kruger appeared, as was scheduled, in Marinette County. I think his appearance was set on for 8:30, and when he appeared at that court proceeding, the state court DA dismissed the charge. A Marinette County deputy was waiting and took Kruger into custody on the federal warrant, either in the rear of the courtroom or just outside. Kruger was then transported to Green Bay and met the pretrial services officers, and then was handed over to agents from the ATF. Kruger's federal court appearance was set for 4 p.m. on the 8th. Between the time he got done at pretrial services and the 4 o'clock court appearance, Kruger was interrogated by agents of the ATF and Detective Berlin.
Was he being given Miranda warnings?
Yes, he was, and he waived those rights. Yes. He signed a form to that effect. The interrogation took place basically in the car on the street outside the courthouse, and Mr. Kruger did give a Mirandized statement. That's important because his statement increased his relevant conduct.
Also, then I recall that he was the one that originally he would decline to make a statement.
Yes.
Before the officers, as they were exiting the car, he called them back to give the statement.
Yes, there was testimony at the evidentiary hearing about the officers saying, well, we're not getting anything, or we're done, it's time for you to go. And he said, no, I still want to talk, that type of thing.
And then he didn't ask, did he, for counsel?
No, he did not during the interview in the car.
Right. Isn't that problematic for you? The waiver, and then he didn't ask for counsel?
Yes, it is problematic for me, but I don't think it's fatal. For example, Kruger had already, and this is the heart of my argument essentially, invoked his right to counsel in the state court proceeding.
Yeah, there's no provision that says he can't change his mind, is there?
No, there is none, but he also never revoked his decision.
No, come on back, I want to talk to you, after being Mirandized and citing the waiver.
Yes.
Sounds relatively clear to me, but I mean, tell me where I'm wrong.
I think, and politely, Your Honor, I think that the court needs to go backwards a little bit.
Yeah, one time he had a lawyer, now he didn't want to talk. Now he's moved to another jurisdiction, he wants to talk.
Well, I would say that he didn't necessarily want to talk, and the point that I want to make, at least at the beginning, the point I want to make is that the police should not have even initiated that conversation to begin with.
Should they have given a no Miranda warning?
No, they shouldn't have interrogated him in the car. They shouldn't have even tried to do that.
You mean they should not have given him the Miranda warning and asked him questions?
No, they certainly should have done that. I'm not...
Well, that's what they did.
I'm not contesting the Fifth Amendment there. Kruger did...
I understand what you're talking about. He didn't have his right to counsel. He wasn't there.
Correct.
But even if you have a right to counsel, you can waive that right, can't you?
Yes, but I believe the waiver is different, I would say, between the Fifth and Sixth Amendment. Kruger never gave up his Sixth Amendment right to counsel. That's my argument.
No, he gave it up when he signed the Miranda warning and said he understood the rights and he was going to talk anyway. That's when you give it up. There was no way he understood he had a right to counsel. He already had one.
Correct.
No. What's the next step?
Well, I would say the next step is once again, and I hate to repeat something or argue with the court. I think
I'll go ahead and argue with the court. I'm having a good time. I don't know whether you are.
It all depends on where we stand, yeah. I suppose.
I don't want to be convinced, you understand, but I just want to know, do you have any case that says that even once you've got an attorney in the state court system or even in the federal court system, that you cannot then decide you don't want your attorney there, enter them or assign a Miranda warning and make a statement?
No, I have no case that says you can't give up your right to counsel. What I'm going back towards is the idea under Michigan versus Jackson that the police shouldn't have even initiated the conversation with him. They knew he had counsel in state court. Kruger had appeared with his attorney, and his right to counsel had both been attached and invoked in the state court proceeding.
Well, they both knew it. He knew it, and they knew it. And he had a right to say, talk to my lawyer. Well, and he's been told that. They give him the warning again, they say this.
Perhaps the difference is that, and I'll use an analogy, when a defendant in a court appearance says to the judge, I want to represent myself, the court then goes through a fairly significant colloquy to see.
But that's a different ball. That's not it. When I go back to the program, whether or not he can say, I'm going to talk to him. They did not talk to him, did not interrogate him until they gave him a Miranda warning, and he didn't respond to that. He said no.
Correct.
It's then he initiates it. Come on back. I want to talk to you.
I see.
They did shut up. They didn't ask him any more questions when he said he didn't want to talk about it.
An argument to that, I suppose, would be that their getting up to leave is part of the interrogation, part of the interrogation.
The Christian burial speech case.
Yes. To that effect, that they...
Won't fly.
Well, particularly when you look at the context of it, because he says he initially refuses to cooperate. He then says he'll give them one name. They say that's piecemeal, and no, that's okay. They're not in it. And then they don't want that kind of cooperation, and then they get out of the car, and he then says he wants to talk. So even in that initial refusal to cooperate, he doesn't say, you know, I need my lawyer, or you all talk to my lawyer. So he realized he had some power there. It wasn't like he was... If you're not arguing that this was coercive, what happened in the car. Or their walking away was coercive in some way.
No. I think that we're perhaps investing Mr. Kruger with too much knowledge or too much understanding of the difference in his constitutional rights. As far as he knew, and this is conjecture, of course, I can't put myself in his mind, his case was dismissed that morning. He didn't know what was going to happen necessarily, other than that he had a federal court case appearance at 4 in the afternoon. As I said, perhaps we're giving Mr. Kruger too much power is the wrong word, too much knowledge of what he can and can't do.
But he was interviewed by a federal pretrial services officer before he got in the car with the ATF.
Yes. Characteristically, that goes to his indigence, home address, that type of information, bail type of information. I believe I'm into my rebuttal time, so I would stop at this point.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Watsa?
Watsa, Your Honor.
Watsa? Thank you.
May it please the court, good morning, Your Honors and counsel. My name is Kelly Watsa. I represent the United States in this matter. We're here today because, as you know, Paul Krueger, the appellant, would like this court to review his the district court's denial of his motion to suppress the statement he gave to the ATF agents on the day of his arrest, August 8, 2003. I'd like to just briefly start with the argument raised by myself and the government's brief, and that's the issue of waiver. Mr. Krueger signed a plea agreement in this matter, which did preserve his right to appeal this issue, but only under very limited circumstances. And those circumstances were to the extent that the district court relied on the substance of his statement in determining his sentencing guidelines range. Put another way, unless Mr. Krueger can show that the district court's sentence was effective, negatively, I would say, or impacted in some way by his consideration of the statement, he has waived that issue on appeal. And I would suggest he cannot make that showing in this case. The record establishes that the government submitted a detailed prosecution version of the offense in this matter. That version of the offense explained how the government had obtained, as counsel indicated, the approximate 3 kilograms of marijuana as well as cash and a weapon during the arrest of Mr. Krueger in June of 2003, but also information that was gleaned from a confidential informant in this case and from a friend of the defendant's, Mr. Ruben Stogbauer. The government proffered that the information provided by these two individuals was reliable for a number of various reasons, and that that information would have been obtained absent and independent of Mr. Krueger's statement. We knew about these folks before law enforcement ever talked to Mr. Krueger on August 8, 2003. The defendant never objected to those findings, the proffer from the government in terms of the reliability or the independent nature of these sources of information. And indeed, the district court found that they were an independent alternative basis upon which he could find that Mr. Krueger peddled in excess of 100 kilos of marijuana. That puts him in the same offense category as his statement did, albeit his statement put him far in excess of 100, I think closer to 350 or 370 kilograms. But for purposes of his sentencing guideline range, whether he's at 101 or 399, it's all the same. And so,
do I understand that the government's position is you join your brother by saying it ought to go back down for resentencing?
Judge, there is a Booker issue in this case, and the Booker issue is limited not to fact-finding, really, because as I indicate, from the government's perspective, Mr. Krueger conceded a number of the facts upon which the government relied, but the mandatory application of the guidelines as opposed to treating them as...
So it goes back down?
It does go back down.
Okay.
I'm in the unique position this morning of arguing the Department of Justice policy in this case concedes error. In any event, Your Honor.
That was your fault, though,
No, Your Honor. So there was some discussion, no doubt, at the sentencing hearing about whether, sort of after the fact, about whether the court should separate all these different pieces of information. Mr. Krueger's counsel very vehemently argued that you have to consider it in total. I kind of said, Judge, that's kind of like saying I want my cake, and I want to be able to eat it too. I want you to consider everything, but I also want to be able to appeal whether you should have considered it in the first place. And so from the government's perspective, we said, Judge, you don't need to consider it. We're not conceding that there was a Sixth Amendment violation in this case, but we think there's other independent evidence which establishes Mr. Krueger's relevant conduct. Look to that, and we avoid the problem. In his submissions to this court, Mr. Krueger sort of argues that the record's not clear on that issue and that he never conceded to the reliability. I think, frankly, that that's a little disingenuous because Mr. Krueger made a number of concessions in the plea agreement, and I'll cite to paragraph 5 of the plea agreement, which is in the record at number 34. He conceded that the government could prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the CI would testify at trial that Krueger bragged about dealing in excess of 450 pounds of marijuana every year. He conceded in that same paragraph that the CIA would say that he knew that Kruger traveled every other week to Milwaukee for the purpose of purchasing marijuana. He also conceded that Reuben Stogweiler would testify that for 10 years he had been purchasing quantities of marijuana from his friend every other week. That's all I'll say about the waiver issue. I see I'm running out of time. I want to note, however, Your Honors, that even if this court disagrees about the waiver issue, there was no Sixth Amendment violation in this case. Mr. Phillip is correct that under Michigan v. Jackson, there is a prohibition against police-initiated conduct once the right to counsel has been invoked. But that right to counsel is offense-specific, and Mr. Kruger's claim sort of rises and falls on his belief that the state proceeding and the state charges are inseparable and, in fact, identical from the federal charges, and that simply is not the case. He would like his invocation of counsel in the state court proceeding to extend indefinitely, indeed beyond dismissal of the state charges, to the federal charges. The Supreme Court has rejected an argument similar to his, that factually related offenses are the same for purposes of the Sixth Amendment. Yes, these offenses arose from the same arrest, but legally they were distinct. In state court, he was charged with possession with intent to distribute and possession of drug paraphernalia. In federal court, the complaint charged him with possession to distribute marijuana, as well as a 924C violation, possession or carrying a firearm during and in relation to a drug trafficking offense. That there is no corollary under the state of Wisconsin's laws to that 924C count. They are separate. They require different facts, and they are separate sovereigns. So invocation of his right to counsel in the state court really was of no consequence to the federal charges. Additionally, beyond that, once, I don't think it's disputed really, that he never invoked his right following the initiation of federal charges against him to counsel, and that is the second requirement of Michigan v. Jackson. And indeed, this court in the Spruill case says, not only do you have to invoke it, you have to unequivocally invoke it. You have to take some affirmative steps to say, I want my right to counsel. He didn't do so in this case. I see my time is up. Unless the court has any further questions.
Well, you still have a couple more minutes.
Oh, I'm misreading my lights.
The red lights. The red light.
But you know,
I'm talking too fast.
There's no constitutional reason you have to use it all.
Right.
If you run out of things to say, you can say
that's right.
I'm happy to address any questions that the court has, and it's sort of a long and winding road here because we do agree that it should go back for sentencing, but I'm urging this court not to find any Sixth Amendment violation, first of all, because he waived it. I don't think you ought to reach it. But secondly, you know, the facts just don't speak to such a violation in this case.
It's not required you repeat yourself. You've already said all that.
I'm going to sit down, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Phillip, how much time? 1 minute.
I'll do my best to take less. Just briefly on 3 points. The waiver issue, I would say that we have not waived the right to appeal on that. Mr. Kruger's statement, I don't think, is separable from the alternative theory used to get relevant conduct. And the district court said, I don't have the quote in my mind, something to that effect. He wasn't sure that he could put those entirely separate from each other. Second, Kruger's statement really is necessary to get over the 100-kilogram threshold to get to the guideline sentence that was imposed. Finally, then, I think that a point that I probably made poorly or didn't make at all originally was that I think that Kruger really should only be able to waive his Sixth Amendment right to counsel in a court. I think that the Fifth Amendment waiver and the Miranda warnings is perhaps different than the Sixth Amendment waiver. With that, I have nothing.
Well, but of course, you don't have any authority to support that.
No, not with me, right? Not that I can come to mind with, Your Honor.
Right, nor in your brief.
Correct.
Okay, all right, thank you.
You're welcome.
And were you appointed?
I'm with the Federal Defender's Office.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. We'll take the case under advisement. Court will stand in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning. And if you weren't here when we started out, Judge Roebner is the third member of the panel. She's unavailable, but she will be listening to the tapes and be part of the case. Thank you.